comments and views expressed on The More Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Moore, The More Show, or this radio station and its affiliates or sponsors.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The More Show, which is sponsored by the UFO Matrix magazine. On today's show, I'm about to be joined by my guest, John Edward. Now, John is an internationally acclaimed psychic medium. He has captivated audiences worldwide with his acclaimed TV show, Crossing Over. John Edward is one of the world's foremost psychic mediums and author of the critically acclaimed New York Times bestseller, One Last Time, What If God Were the Sun? Edward's broad appeal has led to two international Australian tours and guest appearances on everything from CNN's Larry King Live to The Today Show. He is also a regularly featured guest on many top-rated morning radio shows. John's work as a medium enables him to bring comfort and hope to people by reuniting them with those who they have loved, lost, and crossed over. John Edward, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Now, John, just tell my audience just a bit about yourself to begin with.
Well, this is my 26th year doing psychic work. I started when I was 15. I'm turning 42 in October, and most people are familiar with me because I have hosted a show called Crossing Over with John Edward, and then I hosted another show called Cross Country with John Edward. And my work is pretty much dedicated to helping people learn about the spirit world and know that their friends and families who've crossed over are still with them.
Okay, so how did this all start for you, John?
My development actually came at the age of 15 when I went to debunk a psychic who was doing readings for my family. She was doing what's called a house party, and you know, a number of my relatives were going for readings, and as they were coming out of the room, they all had this kind of like glazed over look. And I remember thinking, guys, this is so not real. She's, you know, taking your money and telling you a story based upon your personality. And they were looking at me like, no, you have no idea. Like, this woman is the real deal. I'm like, why is she the real deal? And they were like telling me stuff that she was saying that, yes, it seemed very, very accurate, but I also could poke some holes in some of the stuff. But some of the stuff I just really couldn't. It was just like uncanny. So my cousin talked me into going for the reading, and really the rest is history. She sat with me and told me she was there that day to put me on my path, that I was going to change the way, you know, millions of people thought about psychic phenomena. And I remember thinking, you know, I was 15 years old. I thought this one was on crack, or she was crazy, or there was some type of, like, you know, she was definitely off her rocker. But I was respectful, and you know, it was just an amazing thing because there were things that she told me in that reading that she could not have known unless I told her myself or she hung out with me. And then there were things that she predicted that happened shortly thereafter. So it was kind of like the worlds of my reality collapsed very, very rapidly, and I had to try to rebuild them.
So was there any signs in your family prior to this? I mean, how did it work for you initially? Was there anything in your childhood?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. My father was a New York City police officer and a career military guy who was not a fan of the subject matter, and matter of fact, would never allow me growing up to be around it. He made my mother promise that I would never be around that stuff. That was the way it was referred to in our household. So when my mom and dad separated when I was in my early teens, I was about 12 actually, when they had stuff happen at the house, she would just say, if you talk to your father, please make sure that you don't tell him that we're doing this because I don't want to have to deal with him. But I had already adopted his kind of mentality about the subject matter. You know, it wasn't real. It was a girly thing. Mom's side of the family's kind of crazy, you know, when it comes to this, that they, you know, they believe in this soothsayer stuff. But I had that as my foundational belief system. So when Lydia, the woman who read me, kind of blew that foundation out of the water, I had to rebuild. And in rebuilding my foundational belief system, I had to explore what had happened for the first 15 years of my life. And a lot of the stuff I was able to look back on and say, wow, I could define that and frame that in a metaphysical lens or framework now. Whereas before, I took it for granted as, well, that's just normal. That's just natural. So I had always had experiences. I just never depicted them or defined them in a psychic or paranormal or metaphysical capacity.
Yeah. And what sort of age were you again when you sort of, you know, realized that there was a much bigger picture to all this?
Oh, well, I can tell you I was 15. I was 15 when I had the reading, and I was 15 when my mind got blown. Like, that was just it. Because I remember I felt the word clearly. I can tell you right now, the word that I felt after the reading was violated. I felt like this woman had violated my life and my personal space in some way. And I didn't like it. I didn't like the feeling. And I remember wanting to know more about it. And I went to the public library, and I was embarrassed to check the books out because they were under the occult section of the library, buried in the back. And I was embarrassed to check them out because I thought the occult had such a dark, nebulous, bad connotation. A negative kind of idealistic definition was attached to it for me back then. So I sat on the floor of the public library and I read the books after school. And I remember, like, I must have went through two or three shelves of books in a really, really short period of time. And what piqued my interest was that there were people that were writing books, you know, for the last century that had to deal with the subject matter that I could identify with and now define things in my life up until that point in that way. So it was kind of like going, wow, like, wait, this is like, there's somebody like Carl Jung and Ben Franklin who are, you know, people that are respected in a scientific community who are writing about parapsychology and metaphysics in a way that's real, not like, oh, it's hocus pocus stuff. So it was really, I became insatiable for information.
Yeah, you've mentioned some sort of big authors there as well. So when did you sort of was able to sort of tune in then, to sort of open up a channel as such? When did your next sort of evolution start for you?
The next evolution happened pretty rapidly. I had gone, after I went through all the books in the library, and like I said, I was insatiable, I couldn't get enough information, I said, well, let me go to a real bookstore and see if they have anything that's, you know, different. And when I walked into this one bookstore not too far from my house, the bookshelves went up on a slant. They weren't like regular bookshelves. They were actually like they kind of curved at the bottom, and then they went up on top. And again, the occult section was all the way in the back of the store. So it was like a Saturday afternoon. It was just me and the one woman who ran the bookstore. And she happened to be in the middle of the store stocking shelves. So she was right maybe about 6 or 7 feet away from me. And I was about 3 feet away from the bookshelf itself, just kind of perusing what was on the shelf. And a deck of tarot cards literally fell off the shelf in front of me. And I'm just like staring at them, and I heard the woman's voice say, well, I suppose you're supposed to buy those. And we had a chuckle, and I did. And I bought the tarot cards. And, you know, I sat there with a little instructional booklet that came with the cards and attempted to do, you know, readings. And I remember doing a reading for my cousin Florence. And about a week later, she called me back, and she asked me if I could do the cards for her again, and could she bring 5 friends? And I went, what? And she's like, yeah. She goes, can you do that like psychic card thing that you did, and can I bring 5 friends? I'm like, Florence, please do not take me seriously. Like, I have no idea what I am doing. She said, well, guess what? For somebody who had no idea what they were doing, everything you said that was going to happen happened in the last week, and I want to bring my 5 friends. And literally, that's how it began.
So at what point then, John, did you sort of start trusting what was going on around you? When did you start believing in yourself?
You know, that happened on a pretty regular daily basis, where the exploration and the discovery of the ability was just like so overwhelming that I had to pay attention that there was something that was happening. I had to pay attention to the fact that I was speaking with people that I did not know, and talking about situations in their life that I could not possibly know, and then projecting what was going to be happening for them. And then the reality of that validation was happening relatively quickly. So I was getting feedback on a consistent basis. You know, I would get names of people in their family that would like pop in my head, and I would say it. So it was kind of like, let me see how far I could push this. Let me see how far I could go with this. And it had nothing to do with the afterlife. It had strictly to do with what was happening in a person's life and what was coming up for them and, you know, helping them to understand, like, what a situation was. And I was like the wonder kid of Long Island from, like, 1985 to, like, 1987, where I had, by word of mouth alone, the people that were coming to see me. And they would be shocked when they came to see me that I was, like, 16, you know, or 15 and a half or 17 years old. So it happened, the word of mouth was like wildfire for me.
And was there any particular age that sort of changed everything for you? Was it when you got past 30 that things took off big time? Or, I mean, when did your gift sort of develop to what it is now, really?
You know, I still think it's developing. And I tell people when I teach workshops all the time that if you're doing this work as a practitioner, if you do not view yourself as being a student of the universe, you should no longer be a practitioner, because that means that you think you stop learning. And if you stop learning, then you shouldn't be teaching. So for me, I still think I'm evolving. It's a work in progress. And I will tell you that between 1985 and 1987, my work was strictly basically straight psychic readings, talking about what's happening in a person's life and what's coming for them in the future. And then I will tell you that from 1987, I had predicted the death of my uncle. And in 1987, when that happened, it was devastating for me. I mean, devastating, because I couldn't stop it. That's when the other side opened up in a big, big way, like a very, very big way. Because now I understood that there was something else there. There was something else. And, you know, it helped me to walk through the next door. And then from 1987 until 1989, my practice was really just about seeing my clients. And I would say to them, I know you're here because you want to talk about what's happening in your life now, what's coming up for you, but I also am a medium. So if I can just get your family that's on the other side out of the way quickly, I know that's not why you're here, but if I can just get them out of the way, they'll let me get to the next part. Because I found that if I didn't deal with them first, they would interrupt me as I was trying to focus on career or relationships or that kind of stuff. And I remember this one woman, when I said to her, I go, I'm so sorry. I said, I can't seem to break away from your dad to get to the relationship stuff. And she leaned over and she touched my hand, and she had like tears in her eyes, and she's like, it's okay, that's my dad. And I didn't really quite get it, because I hadn't lost anybody. I lost my uncle, but in 1989, I lost my mother, and then I got it. Loud and clear, really, really, really got it, what it feels like to lose somebody so close to you. And that's what I will tell you when my work shifted, because I think out of necessity and wanting to know where she was and would she see my kids and all that kind of stuff, that's when my work shifted.
And did she make contact with you? I mean, has she sort of left any message?
Multiple times. But, you know, I tell people all the time that being a medium doesn't mean like you walk around with a cell phone to the other side. Being a medium means that you have the opportunity to be able to connect with the other side, very similar to being able to connect with the internet. But that doesn't mean that you are constantly online. You know, some people are online all day. And I consider myself to be plugged in and have access. But I'm not constantly doing readings. I'm not constantly making connections and talking to my family. However, I look at life through a metaphysical lens, and that's part of my evolution now for getting people to do that as well, to say, you don't need to go see a psychic, you don't need to go have a reading, but to have an education and awareness and to look at life metaphysically can actually empower you and enhance your own choices and free will.
Yes, I agree with you there, absolutely. And did you meet much skepticism initially when you were starting on this path?
Did I not mention my father was a New York City police officer and a career military guy? Yeah, I met with lots of skepticism. But, you know, one of the things that I am is I'm pretty ballsy, you know, as a personality. And I really feel like I'm a skeptical person. Just by nature, I'm a skeptical person. Not cynical. Skeptical in the sense of I need to see things and things need to be validated for me. Cynical people to me are sad, because I just think that they're just missing out on so much, and that they miss opportunities. But skeptical people, I think, are smart, because they're exploring and they're questioning. So I am an explorer, and I am definitely a questioner. So I think that I was the biggest skeptic, and I still am when it comes to this work. Not that I don't think the validity of it is there, but I think the intent of other people who do this, the reasons why other people might do this, that to me, I am skeptical of it. You can have somebody who's extremely talented at what they do, but they might not be coming, as far as my definition of doing it for the right reasons or coming from the right place. So, yeah, the skepticism that I met up with from myself is probably more important than the skepticism that I met up with from other people.
Yeah, but do you think, though, John, that to be born into the family that you were, with the sort of skepticism and sort of arguments that would come from your father, do you think that sort of helped to ground you into really, you know, understanding what you've got and what, you know, and how it works?
Absolutely. 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 I think it was a pivotal. And not only that, but I think that, you know, when my mom passed in 1989, I was meditating, trying to kind of just keep myself in some type of emotional balance and honor my grief as best I can. And I remember getting a message from my spirit guides, and I think we all have a team of energies that we work with, and they don't have to be your family and friends, by the way. Probably most of the time they're not. And I remember getting this message really strongly that my mom had to pass, because if she didn't pass, I wouldn't become the person that I needed to become. And I remember thinking, well, that's a crappy message. Like, I would really rather not have gotten that, and quite honestly, I would rather have my mother here at 19 than have to become the person I'm supposed to become. And about 15 minutes later, the phone rang, and it was the woman who did the reading for me initially. And she had become friendly with my mom as a result. And she said to me, John, I have a message for you. And she goes, it might be hard for you to hear. And I'm like, what is that? She said, I got the message that your mom needed to pass because she was done learning the lessons that she needs to learn for her own soul's progression. But her passing was going to help you become the person that you need to become and do what you need to do. 15 minutes right after I got the same message. And she lived in a different state. And I just thought, like, yeah, they know I need the validation. They know that I need to have it backed up. And then 15 minutes after that, a woman that I actually studied with, psychic development and tarot and numerology, called me and gave me the same message 15 minutes later. So I got two messages backing up the original message that I got in my meditation. So that's how I read. Like, that's how I like information to be backed up. And that's how I got it.
It's just incredible. And to know that your mum's love is still with you, that's a very beautiful thing. And, I mean, you mentioned there about spirit guides. I mean, just explain for the audience, how does it work for you now, then?
Here's how I started. I started doing psychic work. And when I would sit down to do a reading for a client, I would literally feel like the information was falling above my head. So imagine water in a shower. If the water in the shower was coming straight above your head and hitting your head, the way that water would feel if it was not water but energy and information. So when I had that, when the information feels like it's coming directly down upon me, I know it's coming from my spirit guides, which are energies that are assigned to me to help me do what I do in my life and in my work. When I work with a client and I would feel like their family and friends were coming through, it would feel like somebody was spraying me from across the room with a hose and the water was coming at me as opposed to above me. So I knew it was two different frequencies that I was actually feeling. And it would be like I would try to pay attention to what was coming from above me information-wise and all of a sudden be sprayed from the side. So I knew I had to deal with the what I would call the annoying child pulling on the phone or on my pants trying to get my attention while I'm trying to have a conversation with somebody. So I would deal with that energy first and then focus back on my guides. But anybody listening to this, I truly believe we all have this team of energies that we're working with, and that's what they're there for, to give us insights and to guide us on our life. Because I really believe that life is the university or the school that we're here or our soul has enrolled in to learn lessons. And the people in our family and our friends and the people that give us trouble in our lives, they are our teachers as well as our students. So our guides help us to kind of move through that. Can't do it for us. I always say they can't interfere, but they can intervene.
You know, after so many years of being in someone in your position as well, why did we come to planet Earth for?
Well, I think the reason we come here is to evolve. And I think, you know, when we, using the university structure, is if somebody wants to get a specific job, they need a certain degree. In order to get that degree, they need to take certain classes. So keeping that framework in mind, coming to Earth is like coming to school. It is the university. And the situations and the choices and the course outline, like if somebody knows that they're going to be a doctor, they know that there are certain courses that they have to experience within that curriculum. So if a soul is choosing an incarnation, and I do believe that we choose the incarnation, I do believe that we choose our families, our all of that kind of stuff, and astrology backs that up. If you have your astrological chart done, if you look at your natal chart, it'll tell you what it means to be you. You know, from your natal chart, your birth date, and then looking at transits and progressions for the rest of your life, you can have an understanding of what the curriculum is. But what you do with that, and this is the big part, everybody's listening, what you do with that is your choice. And that's the important thing.
So we do have free will, in your opinion?
I absolutely 100% believe that we have free will. I absolutely 100% also believe that there are certain moments in life that could be defined as destiny or fate. And those life lessons or those life check-in moments or points are what help us to evolve to the next level or not. You know, it's really, really important for me to to leave people better than I find them, whether it's an interview or a seminar or a private session. I like to make sure that I've done my job and inspired them in some way, even though it might not be with the information they want to hear. You know, specifically if somebody like lost a child and, you know, they want to hear specific things, I might not get that information, but if I can validate the process for them, then I can inspire them to know that it's possible for them to also connect with their child moving on. And for me, I always use the word validate. The word validation for me is really, really important. And that connection, that knowing, leaving people better than I found them, helps me to know that as a teacher, because that's truly what I see I am, as a teacher, I've done my job.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, John, I mean, every reading that you do for someone, do you find it's a reading for yourself?
100%, absolutely, yes. And I say this at my events. I've had, you know, I mean, clearly I have my own personal life. I have my own stuff that's going on. And, you know, I remember when my mom passed, I had taken some time off from doing this work. I actually became very angry and didn't want to do it because in 1987, I witnessed my uncle's death in my head months before it happened and literally tried to stop it by screaming from the rooftops. And December 29th, 1987, he wound up passing from a heart attack in the way that I saw it, and I couldn't stop it. And that was very, very, that was devastating for me. I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown because I couldn't understand why I would be shown something that I can't stop. And then in 1989, when my mom was diagnosed with a very, very terminal form of lung cancer, I sat and argued with the top cardiothoracic surgeon in New York that she had, as a physician, that my mother did not have cancer, because if she had cancer, I would have known. So to my dismay, I found that not only did she have cancer, but it was, you know, it was just, it was really, really, really a bad form. So when she passed in 1989, like a year and a half after my uncle, I had bookended experiences. One that I saw and couldn't stop, one that I didn't see and couldn't stop. Now I can look back at the age of 42 and say, okay, I totally get that those were two very, very pivotal experiences early on in my career to say, you're only allowed to see certain things, and you're here to learn lessons in the same way like everybody else, and keep your ego in check. It's not about you. It's about the process. And that process was revealed to me in a very, very big way. But, oh my goodness, was it a very difficult lesson for me to have to deal with as a medium doing this work, that I couldn't save my own mother. Like, that was very hard.
I can only try to put myself in your situation. And as well, it's like you said there, you're pointing out, you know, you're only human. You're here to learn certain lessons as well.
Yep.
So what are some of the signs then? Do people miss some of the signs when their loved ones are trying to communicate with them, do you think?
I think two things happen. I think that we have a grouping of people who miss the signs. I think we have a grouping of people who sometimes see things and question it and then kind of maybe like shrug it off. And then we have the opposite. We have people that, you know, think that every single thing that happens in their day is a sign from, you know, grandma. Like everything from finding the parking spot at the mall to, you know, finding the boyfriend or husband or whatever it is, their family member has guided and directed them in some way, which takes it to the opposite extreme. Like, and I think to find that healthy balance of knowing that it's possible, recognizing that it exists, incorporating it in a healthy, insightful way into your life, not one that you live by, but one that you have as a foundational belief system. Like, I don't train my kids to be psychic. I train them to understand the potential impossibility. I prepare them for one day when either I'm not here or somebody else in their family is not here, that they know that the connections are possible, and that even though it's never enough, it has to be until a time we can reconnect again. And I find ways in their frames of references to be able to educate them and draw comparisons from cartoons to movies to TV shows to books to conversations to nature, just to kind of layer it as a belief system. The same way they don't hyper-focus on colors, but they recognize them in their everyday life.
No, absolutely. And I mean, some people, they want to see it in front of their face, and, you know, life's not like that. I mean, what is the actual answer to some of life's problems? I mean, there's so many books out there, sort of New Age books, some great books as well, but there is right. No one answer, is there?
There is no one answer. And, you know, when somebody says to me, I had somebody recently come to me at an event, and we were talking about one specific area of psychic development, and she said to me, she goes, why didn't you tell me that you had a book that just came out about what we were talking about? And I smiled, and she said, why are you smiling? I said, because that would be really, really wrong with me that I should only recommend my book? What if what's in my book isn't going to help you? And I said, what was my exact answer to you when you asked me to recommend a book to you? And she gave me my answer. My response is always the same. Go to the bookstore. The book will pick you. What you're supposed to know will pick you. And I truly believe that. Now, I've got a number of books that are out there on a number of subject matter. I don't think I've ever said to somebody, you have to go read my book. If I felt that strongly, I would hand it to them from my office, or I would mail it to them. I would never tell somebody to go buy it, because I truly, truly believe, whether it was me working at a psychic fair way back when, or doing your interview today, and the people that are tuning into this, they're tuning in and they're connecting with this because they're supposed to. We find and come across in the universe the things that are going to help us to evolve or help us to grow, learn. And it's our choice as to whether or not we buy that book, listen to that show, watch that program, buy that ticket, go to that gym. It really doesn't matter if it's metaphysics or not. If there are people right now that are listening to this who are overweight, that are not happy with how their body feels, and they feel disgusted, so they get up and they go eat a cupcake as opposed to doing a sit-up or having, you know, a celery stick dipped in dressing as opposed to, you know, a piece of cake, then it's all about healthy choices. And it's really not, as far as I'm concerned, a big difference between physical fitness and spiritual fitness. I, as a spiritual trainer, can't make you lose your grief. I can help you in the process of dealing with grief in the same way that a trainer can educate you about diet and nutrition. But it really is up to the individual.
What do you think a lot of our problems sort of, you must have see a lot of common threads in your readings that you give. Do you think one of the common problems is a sort of, you know, lack of self-love?
I think that there's two big motivators that I'll talk about, and fear and love. I think people are coming from a place of fear, or they're coming from a place of love. If people can get to more of a place of, as you just put it, self-love, or the love of life, or the love of doing things, or coming from a motivation of the love of something, and as opposed to the fear of not doing something, it really would shift things. I mean, think about it. Everything that's happening in the world right now, when we talk about the discord, whether it be the Middle East or whatever, fighting over religion, they're fighting over the fear of who's wrong or right, as opposed to the respect and the love of somebody else's belief. I'm not Jewish. I have absolutely no connection to Hinduism. I have no connection to being an Episcopalian, or to be really put it out there, Islam. I have no whatever. But you know what? I am extremely respectful of somebody else's beliefs, extremely respectful, and interested in hearing about them. I would never turn around and say, you're wrong, I'm right. That blows my mind. But when people do that, they're coming from a fear that what they believe might be taken away from them or is not correct. So I'm the kind of person that when somebody comes to me and they say something, like I had recently had somebody come to me, they had this amazing dynamic that took place in their house, and they think it's coming from one of their parents who passed. Do I believe that their phenomena is happening? I do believe it. I saw it. They videotaped it for me. But I can't say it is happening, and I can't say it's not happening. What I can say is I see that it's taking place, but I cannot explain it. But that doesn't mean I'm going to argue that their experience is not their experience.
No, that's right. And, I've got so much to talk about here, John, but just, again, we sort of talk about fear and love there, but do you think another big thing that we're here to learn is emotions as well?
Absolutely, and honoring that. You know, I tell people, when people come to see me, what they're really looking for is they're looking for the connection. They want me to fix them. They want me to heal them. And when I was in the UK last year, there was a woman who asked me a question at the beginning of one of my small groups. She said, are you a healer? And I nodded in an affirmative way, but then said no. And she looked at me like, well, which is it? Yes or no? And I thought about it for a second. I went, no, I am not a healer. Because if I was a healer, that would mean that I have the ability to heal your grief. I said, I am a teacher. I have the ability to raise your awareness and to teach you about my experiences. What you do with that, I think, can be healing. But I am not a healer. So I try to empower people as best I possibly can. You know, when I first started doing this, my grandmother used to get very frustrated with me because I lived in her house and she saw my clients coming in. And there would be people who would come in my office and they'd be there for like maybe, you know, 10 minutes. And then they'd be walking out. And she looked at me one day and she goes, there's no way you could have read that person in 10 minutes. I said, no, you're absolutely right. And she said, what happened? I said, I didn't like their energy. And she's like, what? I go, I didn't like their energy. I said, I didn't want to read them. I said, so I politely declined doing the sitting for them. And she looked at me and she goes, how do you do that? I said, well, I take what I do extremely seriously. And if I'm going to be doing it for you and you're coming to me, that's my time. And even though you're paying me for my time, it's still my time. If you're not going to appreciate how I'm spending my time with you, then I'm not going to spend it with you. And she used to look at me and go, you're not going to have any clients. I go, I'm not really concerned. And you know what? Whether I was 15 doing that or 16 and now 42, I'm exactly the same way. And you know why? Because I want to let people know that I really strongly take what I do seriously and I respect it in a very, very powerful way because it needs to be. And if I come at it that way, then my clients will respect it in the same way, which means, and it boils down to one place, grief does not yield entitlement. Just because you lost your husband, brother, wife, son, mother, father, it doesn't make you any more special than the next person who lost their husband, wife, brother, father. And if you can get out of that place of entitlement, then you can get to a place of empowerment. And it's moving away from the anger of the experience and getting into the love. And I'll always say, give yourself the gift of grief. Really give yourself the gift of honor what it is that you're feeling, not what you're fearing about the loss of the person. And then you can get back to the connection that you're looking for. And anybody that's listening to this, I will tell you, going for a reading, whether it be at a group or a private or whatever it is, it's never enough. Never can it be enough. Because if it was enough, the person would still be living.
No, absolutely. But I think, it, you know, doing what you do, John, and doing these tours, I think it's needed because, you know, not everyone, as much as they'd like to, would go see a psychic because it scares them. And I think to be in that environment of an arena, it, you know, even if you just open up their mind that to the possibility that there's just more than what you think there is, then you've done your job.
That's my focus. This is exactly what I do. And I tell people all the time, if you're thinking about coming to see a medium, me or anybody else who does this work, and you're going with the sole intent of, I have to be read. If I don't get read, I'm going to be devastated. Do not go. Stay home. If you can go to an experience like this to participate in it, and look at it as if it was a concert. If you were going to a musical event, if you were going to a concert, you would not go to the concert and expect the person on the stage to single you out and sing directly to you. However, you can share in the experience of everybody's collective enjoyment of that artist or that music. So if you can go to an event or if you go for a private session and you can go for the experience of connection of whoever might come through and really mean that, not say it. Like I crack up when I do radio stuff or on TV and you know, I say, you know, is there somebody specific you'd like me to connect with? And that's the only time I'll actually ever ask that question is if it's going to be like live radio, if it's going to be like Larry King live television, because people call up and say, oh no, I'm really open to anything. That is the biggest lie going. What they're really saying is I'm open to the process, but I really, 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 really want to hear from my mom. And then what happens is the medium opens up and the medium starts giving information from, you know, Aunt Sarah, not from mom, and the person is so focused on listening and trying to apply everything to mom, it's not going to make sense, so it becomes a waste of time. So I'll say to people, like, who are you hoping to hear from? And they'll say, let's say, my mom. Great. And I'll say, well, I'm not getting your mom, but I am getting this. But the reality is, it's coming through. And if you can literally just participate in the experience and the what I call it, just the awesomeness of that, the possibility is there, you might not hear from your mom, but if you can hear from Aunt Sarah, that means it's possible.
Absolutely, and it's just being part of the whole experience as well, and just having that spark just at that moment to just, you know, make you think in a different way. I use the word outside the box, but it's not really, is it? It's just opening up to the possibility, isn't it?
It is opening up to the possibility. You know, a lot of people who know me, I write a newsletter that are from my website, and it goes out monthly. And every month, I think for about 2 or 3 months in a row, I included something about a new discovery. One of my friends that worked on Crossing Over with me, who was in charge of like the editing of the show, kept saying to me, you need to watch Doctor Who, you need to watch Doctor Who, you need to watch Doctor Who. And I kept laughing and going, isn't that like an old 60s show? And because I remember my dad used to watch it, and I wasn't very close to my dad, and I kind of had like this block up towards it. She goes, you need to watch it. Well, I downloaded the season from 2005, and the rest was history for me. I think I went through every season in less than a month. Because on my touring, all I did was watch it on my iPad. And when I watched that, the writing of the stories, the identification that I had with the character of the doctor and doing the work and traveling and coming in and out of people's lives, and then when you just use the reference of thinking outside the box, that's what sparked that for me. I say it all the time. We all feel like we're aliens on a planet when we lose a relative, and we feel like we landed in this place that looks familiar, but nobody knows who we are, because they don't understand our heart and they don't understand our relationships. And I remember when I lost my mom, a high school friend of mine who had lost her dad a year before, she's the only person that I can tell you I fully remember what she said to me 22 years ago, verbatim. She walked over to me at the funeral home and she said, "John, I'm not going to tell you I know exactly what you're feeling right now because you lost your mom and I lost my dad last year. I am going to tell you that I understand loss, but more importantly, I'm going to tell you I'm here for you." So if you can remember that, the people that are listening to this, if you have somebody that loses someone, never say they're in a better place. Never say, "I know what you're feeling because I lost a son too." Never say they're with you and I know that. Never say all those things that are cliche. Just let the person know, "I'm here for you. If you want to talk, let's talk and celebrate the person that you're missing."
No, I absolutely agree with you. And it was just this weekend when actually, funny enough, that became a reality for me. So it's funny you say that, because I know someone else who's going through a process right now, and that's exactly the same conclusion I came to.
Now, and the other thing that I try to stress for folks, and nobody tells you this, and it's going to sound really harsh, and I'm going to say it, but it's really important. If you know somebody, or if you are that somebody, who's dealing with your second year of the grief cycle, the second year's harder. It's much, much worse. And nobody tells you this. So I try to get it out there as best I possibly can, specifically when holiday times are coming up. Because that first year of loss, everybody focuses on you. So you, as the person who's dealing with the loss, you're dealing with the loss of the person. You don't really feel like they're gone because they're still really strongly connected to you, trying to help you through that process from the other side as best as they can. You have all these other people that are kind of there for you. And then life happens. It moves on, and things start getting back to normal. So now that person is not only dealing with the physical loss of the person that passed, but now they're dealing with the loss of all the support that was helping them in that. So that second year kicks in, and people go on with life like it's normal, and you're left to really now deal with the meat and potatoes of the loss without the support. So I always say, if you're going through that second year of loss, please do not think that you're crazy, that you're thinking like you're having a harder time this year than you did last year. And if you know people who are dealing with it, kind of reach out to them when it comes to the holidays and the birthdays and anniversaries, just with the simple, "You know, I'm here if you want to talk."
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying there as well is don't forget the people on this side.
It's really, you know, the executive producer of Crossing Over came over to me after the first 6 months of doing the show, and he looked at me and he goes, "I get it." He goes, I got it now. He goes, "We're not making a show about dead people." He goes, "We're making a show about celebrating life." And I smiled at him and I went, "That's why you're executive producing my show." Like, that's the important thing, is to understand that dealing with mediumship in an afterlife isn't about living there. It's about living here. It's about incorporating, just remember the colors. As kids, we're given crayons. We're taught what our colors are. But we don't walk around every single day going blue, green, white, beige. You basically incorporate it into how you see things. You see the green wall, you see the white trim, you see the blue sky, you see the blue ocean, you see the white pants, you see the red sports car, you see all these things. And as I'm describing that, everybody listening to this is seeing that in their head. Well, if we can get to understanding the process of the other side, like colors, and incorporating it in how we see things, then life becomes much more brilliant.
Even if everything you were saying was wrong, you've helped people so much by, you know, just being the person that you are and the healing that you've given to people. I mean, what we're saying on this show is there are no answers, yeah? You've got to come up with your own answers and what feels right for yourself. And, you know, that can only come from the individual. And, you know, who knows except for, you know, your faith will guide you in the right direction. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I always say trust. You know, earlier on in this interview, you asked me, how did I kind of come to that place of trusting? I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm looking at a card on my desk, and it has the word trust written on it. I look across my office. There's a rock that has the word trust written on it because I am a control freak in life. You know, I'm extremely anal retentive, slightly OCD in how I do things. It definitely overflows into how I read. But if you looked at my appointment book, you would crack up laughing. It's color coordinated, it's labeled, I have an online version of it, you know, there's like, I'm very, very on top of stuff. But yet, my job is as invisible as it possibly can come, and I have to trust something that I can't control. So I say to people, if I could do that, then you could do that. So trust is a really important thing, but it's really trusting yourself to recognize the world of energy that we live in and looking at it through a metaphysical kind of lens.
Absolutely. And would you say that you can only help others when initially you help yourself? Put yourself first, do what you love to do, and by doing that what you love to do, it's a natural occurrence to help others.
Two things. One, if you fly in an airplane, you say that they do the safety announcement, and they always say, make sure you put on your oxygen mask first before you try to help a child or somebody you're traveling with. There's a reason why they say that. If you can't breathe, you can't help somebody else. That's number one. And number two, you know, if you put passion into your profession, it yields profit. But profit is not always money. You can profit in other ways as well.
I just want to go back to your sort of mid-time in your career. Where did the sort of jump happen from having the show that you've got now, Crossing Over, which is an internationally recognized show anywhere you go? Your class is one of the biggest psychics in America. How did the jump happen? Was it from radio or...
I'll tell you exactly how it happened. I you know, saw clients privately, and then I couldn't keep up with the amount of people that wanted to see me privately, and I started seeing people in small groups, and then the small groups became bigger groups, and it literally was trying to keep up with the demand. Like, how do I keep up with the people that want to see me and the responsibility that I felt towards teaching? So it's like, okay, well, I can do it like this, I can do it like that. And I remember somebody said, you know, I was actually interviewed by a journalist, and long story short, her husband was a writer, and he and I worked together on a proposal, and it was going to be a skeptical journalist, his guide towards spirituality and discovering mediumship, is it true, is it false, and would I go with him to meetings with different publishers, and I went, sure. So I figured, like, you know, I'm the guy that's going to make the balloon animals at the party, so yeah, I'll come and do my thing so that people realize that this is real, and he'll get his book published, and I get a chance to teach through it. Well, what wound up happening was not what he expected, not what I expected either, to be honest, is that none of the publishers were interested in his journey. They were interested in me. And we wound up collaborating on my first book. And when that book was coming out, I was very excited because I thought, like, wow, book yields credibility. You know, a book is a way for me now to increase how people can learn about the subject matter and teach, because you teach in books. And how cool is this? I was extremely naive about the publishing world. And, you know, I didn't realize that you actually have to promote a book. Like, you have to go out there and talk about it in a certain way. And that had made me a little bit, I guess my control freaky side was kicking in, going like, well, I don't want to do that. Can't he do that? You know, and they were like, well, it's not his book. It's about you. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to be known. Like, I wanted people to know my name and what it stood for. I didn't want them to know my face. I wanted to have a normal life. And I was afraid that the two were going to blend in a very big way. So I had to do promotion, so I started doing radio, and I liked radio because radio, you didn't have to see me. You can hear my voice, you can know my name, you can know what the work stands for. So while the book was being written, I started doing radio. I had gotten requests to do a lot of media I just got a lot of requests early on. I said no to most things, but when the book was, you know, the people at the publishing company said, you know, you're going to have to do media to promote the book, I figured I'm going to do a lot of radio. So what I did was I got myself on radio, and then, you know, you do one radio show and then they talk to another radio show, and it's like my clients, like, you know, my cousin with the five readings, the same exact thing. I started getting phone calls from radio stations all over the United States, you know, can you do our morning show? Can you do our morning show? Would you be exclusive to us? Would you do this? Would you do that? So I had this like amazing radio infrastructure. So when the book came out, I was like, I'm good. We're ready to promote it. And they said, no, you have to do TV. I was like, I'm not doing TV. Like, I'm not doing TV. I will do radio. And they said radio will not sell books in the same way that, you know, and they were very clear, like, this is our book. Technically, it's your book, but it's our book. And if you don't do this, we're not publishing it. Like, it was that kind of a thing. So I'm like, oh, my God. Well, then I started doing TV. And I met a couple of producers who said, would you like to do your own show? I said, I would love to do a syndicated radio show. Could we make that happen? And they said, how about TV? And I'm like, what is it with you people? Do you not understand that this makes great radio? It's live, it's interactive, I can't be accused of editing. Like, can you please just focus on it? And they said, give us the opportunity to try to do a show with you, whether it be radio or television. And I went, okay. 6 months later, we were in production for Crossing Over.
And it's history from there, basically, isn't it?
that's how it happened.
I mean, it must be a great privilege to do the kind of show that you do, to sort of, you know, go from coast to coast. I mean, how do you balance a normal life, John?
You know, it's really funny. It's really about structure, and it's really about creating it, and thoughts manifest reality. You know, I've got two kids. My son's going to be 9 in September. My daughter's going to be 5 in January. And, you know, I travel a lot, and I have to be honest, it is not easy leaving them to go do this. And somebody said to me, don't you feel, you know, like you're missing out? And I said, no, I said, I have an amazing relationship with my kids. And, you know, I take them as much as I possibly can. I said, and I know that the quantity of time that I spend with them is limited, but the quality of time that I have with them is far exceeds, you know, anything. And I say that very confidently. But I made a promise a long time ago, and that promise was to this work. And I do put this work ahead of a lot of things because, and here's how I say this, I have my kids to go home to. There are so many people around the world who do not. And if I could shine a little bit of light in a dark place for them, and a lot comes to do with my grandmother when my mom passed. My grandmother was still alive, my mom's mom. And she made me promise her, quite honestly, that I would dedicate myself to things. One, that I would dedicate myself to people like her who lost their baby. And two, that I would try to find more patience with my clients because she always thought I didn't have enough patience with them. So I struggle with that second one still to this day. But I try to honor that as best I can. And I know that I will be doing this work for the rest of my life. I know that I will not be doing this work in the way that I'm doing it right now at the pace that I do it for the rest of my life, and that's by choice. But I really do want to help people, and I really do want to raise their awareness. And, you know, whether 5 people come to a group or 5,000 people come to a group, I'm still doing the same work. I'm still doing the same level of teaching. And it is a privilege, and I am so honored that you've used the word a privilege to do this work, because it truly is.
No, I mean, and I'm sure that your grandma's love is with you all the time, and I'm sure she's, you know, she's with you right now, and just saying that how proud she is of what you've done and the help you've given people as well, because, you know, it's not easy. But then again, I never signed, and I'm sure you didn't sign a contract before we came down here to say it was going to be easy. So we're obviously getting to the top of the hour here. So just one other quick question I wanted to sort of direct this interview in as well was, we are living in a very important time right now, and there's changes going on this earth that I didn't think I'd see in my lifetime at this stage. Now, with 2012 coming up and everything, where do you see, is 2012 a conscious shift, or is it something more?
I think 2012 is just a demarcation point for a shift that's actually taking place. I mean, from an astrological standpoint, you can look at it as the age of an era. It's actually the end of an age, quite honestly. I believe it's the end, and the astrologers would know this better than I would, but I believe it's the end of a 26,000 period of time. And astrologically looking at that, I say astrologically in the zodiac kind of capacity, we're moving from, I believe, the Piscean age to the Aquarian age. And there are going to be shifts of consciousness. From an astronomy standpoint, 2012, you know, the sun is also doing a shift. The sun is going to either, it goes in 11-year cycles, and I think the last time it happened was in, you know, 11 years ago, or in 2012, it'll be 2,000 moments the last time it had happened. It was like a solar flare. So there's a solar maximus and a solar minimus. That's going to be taking place in 2012. There's a lot of shifts overall. But do I think it's the end of the world? Absolutely not. So I tell people all the time, like, there is no MasterCard, Visa, American Express clause that says, end of world, don't pay your bill. So don't be charging stuff up you can't be paying for, because January 2013, your bills will be showing up and you will be accountable for them. That's number one. But more importantly, in the bigger scheme of things, there are huge shifts that are taking place. If you look at the Earth as being an organism, of which it truly is, it is going through a shift, and there will be shifts in its physiology. You're seeing that with the weather patterns. I mean, we've had in the last year one of the most intense weather-related cycles that we've ever had planetary-wise. More of that will be shifting. Spiritually, I think there are shifts. I think emotionally there are shifts. And I think now is a great time. You know, look at this. There's a phenomenal astrologer. Her name is Maggie Kerr. She's out of Australia. And I have something. All Libras have the planet Saturn going through their sign. And the planet Saturn means business. It is an authority figure. It's a it's really setting up a lot of structure. And it's there for, you know, like a 2-year period of time. Every astrologer who knew that or knows that I'm a Libra would all have the same, like, like that kind of a, you've got Saturn going through your sign. And it got to be a little overwhelming for a while, like, oh my God, like, what the hell is going to happen, you know, between now and December 2012, like, to all Libras? It's like, you don't want an astrologer looking at your chart, and you don't want a doctor looking at your chest x-ray and making a wince, you know, or like a negative kind of a thing. And then I met Maggie, and she said, how wonderful you have Saturn going through your chart. And I, like, looked at her with this kind of, like, New York skeptical eyebrow raise, like, is this the part of the program where you cushion the blow and tell me how screwed I am until, you know, December 2012? And she said, no, honey. She goes, it's really all up to you. You need to look for the magic in the moment. It was like the sun came out and angels started to sing, because I really truly felt that she embodied what I think anybody who does this work should, and that is leaving people better than you found them. She inspired me to know that there would be change. She inspired me to know that there would be structural shifts within relationships around me. But she also inspired me to know that I can learn, evolve, and grow. And it didn't have to be a 2-year period of negativity. That's what I want to impart to people regarding 2012. Let's understand that there are going to be shifts, but don't come from the place of being fearful of the shifts. Embrace the shifts, because with those changes could be positive things if we all kind of band together to manifest it in a positive way.
Now, you've got a UK tour that starts pretty soon. Where can people find out more information and to get tickets for your up-and-coming tour?
Anything that I do is always at johnedward.net. There's no S on John Edward. It's johnedward.net.
Okay. And any books and everything, we'll put links on our website for amazon.com and .co.uk. John, I just want to say it's been such a pleasure to have you on. And, you know, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh my God, thank you for the opportunity. I look forward to meeting you in person.
To find out more information on John's up-and-coming UK tour, just go to johnedward.net and look at the events page on his website, or visit my site, themoreshow.co.uk, and look up John Edward under past guests. Now, don't forget, you can now follow The More Show on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/TheMoreShow. And we have a TV show, which is on every Friday, 6 p.m, Sky 201 and Freesat 403. So until next time, be safe.